This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, everyone. Do you wish you were somewhere sunny, but are dealing with another crazy spring? There's a solution to get that feeling. I'm grabbing a Hawaiian Breeze 5-Hour Energy and escaping there in my mind. Sports fans, ever stay up late for the game and drag the next day? A 5-Hour Energy shot will fix that no problem. 5-Hour Energy's website has tons of flavors, over 15 to choose from. Watermelon, Tropical Burst, Blue Raspberry, and even hard-to-find ones like Strawberry Lemonade and Extra Strength Fan Fuel. There's a flavor for everyone. You can even build your own 12 or 24 pack and have it delivered. Or grab a shot at your local store. They're everywhere. And it's basketball season. My schedule is packed and I don't want to miss a second, so I grab a 5-Hour Energy shot. They're perfect for back-to-back games or when my team plays late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going through the game and the next morning. Visit 5hourenergy.com for deals and to stock up before tip-off.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always live and free on the Odyssey apps. The youngest in charge, and Noah Willingham, taking you up to 10 o'clock. A lot more to get to. Right now, we're continuing to talk all things Washington Commanders as we ease into the 9 o'clock hour. We'll talk a little bit about the Washington Wizards. They had some history being made over the weekend.
8 o'clock hour, bud.
No, as we move into the 9 o'clock hour, we will. That's what I said. As we move into the 9 o'clock hour, we will talk about the Washington Wizards. We haven't moved into the 9 o'clock hour yet because we're not in the 9 o'clock hour. That's why I said we'll move. I'm not explaining what I said. The people know. As we move into the 9 o'clock hour, we'll discuss a little bit about the Washington Wizards. They had some history made over the weekend in their big win over the Denver Nuggets. I'm calling it a big win, but in reality, like I'm sure people are upset about them winning. But look, they're 9-10 in their last 19 games, playing close to .500 basketball. The young pups are showing growth and development, and they've still got tremendous lottery odds. So all is well for the Washington Wizards. We'll talk about that. I'll talk about them, rather, back half of the 8 o'clock hour as we get into the 9 o'clock hour. Bijan Todd of the Monumental Sports Network going to join us at about 8:45. But right now, want to look at the Commanders and what they've done in free agency thus far. Last year, there were a couple of different guys that when they signed them, I went, okay, let's see if they make the team. I wonder how much of an impact they actually have. The two guys that I said that for, and I'm going to name this segment after them, Olamide Zaccheaus, Noah Igbinoghene. Two guys that had been around the NFL for a couple of seasons, but really hadn't really caught on with another team. In Olamide Zaccheaus' case, he had some production. He's been a number three receiver, and I kind of thought he would give them something. I didn't think it would be a career season for the guy, though, especially on the contract that they brought him in on. Noah Igbinoghene was also interesting because Noah I is a guy that is a former first-round pick and has good measurables, I would say, for the position, right? And a guy that is just 25 years of age. So for him to come in here and for Washington to get what they got out of him was super impressive. But the bigger overarching theme to me here is it's two guys that you didn't expect anything out of when they signed. yet they ended up having massive, massive roles on the team. It's a byproduct of Washington last year doing a really good job maneuvering in that second wave of free agency. I thought they did an excellent job, right? And you saw it. Noah Igbinoghi, Alameda Ezekias, you know, to me, like, I don't know, man. I'm happy with last year's free agent signings, obviously. I think this year, though, they had a similar mentality going into it. There are so many second wave guys that they brought in that I think have a potential to have an impact. You look at Dietrich Wise. He was a second wave free agent guy. You look at Will Harris. He was a second wave free agent guy. You look at Javon Kinlaw. I don't think the Kinlaw signing actually can be viewed as a second wave signing because of the money he got. But Jonathan Jones, a guy that didn't get close to top of the market money, but they brought him in. One of my favorite signings of the offseason was Nate Herbig being brought in for Pittsburgh. Another guy that can be considered a second wave signing. I think Washington's done a tremendous job shopping in that department over the past 2 years. This year, though, when it comes to that fashion over men's type of signing, right? That's how I've been describing it, right? They could go swing big at Neiman Marcus and bring in a cat like Javon Kinlaw, right? Throwing him the bag, right? But it's their fashion over men signings. It's their H&M signings, right? Your Noah Eyes, your Nick Allegretti's, Dante Fowler last year. It's those guys that I'm looking at right now. They've done a really good job shopping in that department, so to speak. Who will be this year's version of Noah Igbinoghi, of Alameda Ezekias? I already named one of them, man. I think Dietrich Wise has a real opportunity to be that guy, right? I think Dietrich Wise has a real opportunity to be the free agent surprise, the free agent standout of this football team. First of all, the fact that he comes from the New England Patriots, sign me up for it. Championship pedigree, has been around the block before at age 30, 6'5", 280 pounds. And then for him, I look at the production over the past three seasons. He's had 18 sacks combined over the past 3 years. 5 sacks last year, 5 sacks in 23, and then 8 sacks in 2022, which was a career high. So at 30 years old, a little bit long in the tooth, but I think he's got plenty of juice left in the tank. One thing that we're going to look at with him that I like, and you got to go back a little while to go get to it, but I think him as a pass rusher, the grades via PFF haven't been bad, right? Last year, it was 64. 2023 was terrible. 2022, it's a 76.4, which I think that coincides with the most playing time he received in his career. But at his size, right, 6'5", 280, I look at him as somebody that can help set the edge. And we know he's got pass rush juice because there are 18 sacks from him in the past 3 years. Him at 6'5", 280, I think can be more stout at the point of attack. And let's just say he ends up, I know this would maybe annoy some people, but if it's him and Dorrance Armstrong as your two defensive ends week one, and he gets more playing time and he gets more of an opportunity, you saw it last year, what guys could do when they get their opportunity. I'm not saying he's going to be a double-digit sack guy, but I think he makes your football team better, and he's got a real opportunity to make an impact. So in terms of who's going to be this year's Alameda Ezekias, who's going to be this year's Noah Igbinoghi, my first guy that I think is at the top of the list is Dietrich Wise. I think he's got a real opportunity to outplay his contract for sure. The other guy that I look at in terms of, you know, having an impact despite being kind of a bargain free agent signing, it's going to shock some people. I'm prepared for it. A full season of Noah Brown. Give you one on offense, give you one on defense. You get a full season of Noah Brown, and the sky could be the limit. Everyone's panicked about the wide receiver spot. We got to bring somebody else in. I think they've addressed it well. Last year, Noah Brown, before he got hurt, 35 catches, 453 yards, and then obviously the one touchdown, which was the Hail Mary against Chicago. But the other area that I love from him is, one, the physicality in the run game and the screen game as a blocker. They were using him as a lead blocker on some plays. And then, I don't know how much stock you could put into it, but I think you can put a decent amount because it's a skill. He drew the second most pass interference yards in the NFL last year. And if you remember, while he was healthy, it felt like a routine thing for Jaden Daniels to push the ball deep and then Noah Brown drawing a DPI, giving them huge chunk yardage down the field. The one thing I love about Noah, his role was not clearly defined, right? He came in here, didn't play versus Tampa, and then in week two helps you win the game and showed you that this pass game can be unlocked against the New York Giants. So, like, I love me some Noah Brown. 29 years old, still got a lot of juice in the tank, in my opinion, man. I think he's got a chance to have a really, really good year this year because I think he's going to be that wide receiver three for this team, right? I think Debo and Terry are your top two receivers. And then I think Noah also has a chance to come in here and have a pretty sizable impact. I want to take this to the phones, though, man. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. Who will be this year's Alameda Zacchaeus? Who will be this year's Noah Igbinoghi? That bargain bin free agent signing that completely outplays his salary. My guy, Super Dave Al Waldorf. What's going on, brother?
The youngest in charge. What up, though?
What's going on, my man? How are you?
Nothing. All is well, man. Thank you for taking my call. Hey, listen, man, you made some key points. You touched on some key parts. And I just want to piggyback. For me, this year, I think that second wave signing and that next Noah I could possibly be Will Harris.
I like that one.
I love the signing of Will Harris, a versatile player. You could put him in the box. You could put him at the corner, safety. I mean, he's versatile. He's all over the field. I'm looking at what this regime is doing. And in previous years, it was our front seven that was big on defense. But now it looked like this year, because our front seven, I mean, well, let's say this, our back four depended on our front seven.
For sure.
But I think this year, our front seven is going to depend on our back four. We got a great secondary this year, and we got some dogs out there. So our defense, I love what they're doing on defense. You said something about Wise. That was also a great pickup. But on the offense side of the ball, real quick, Linnell, I know you were talking about number 85. I do like him. But if you got number 1 and number 17 out there, what is number 12, Luke McCaffrey, going to do?
Oh, that's interesting.
I really expect a lot more from Luke McCaffrey this year. I'm not saying if he don't have a bang-out year, he's a bust, because he's a McCaffrey. It's in his pedigree, so you got to give a boy some time to grow and get used to the speed of the NFL. But I expect more from Luke McCaffrey this year in our offense. And I know with the addition of Debo Samuel and the Kiff Kingsbury offense, man, sky's the limit. So I love what this regime is doing. They addressed issues with that secondary, because the secondary was big, man. We was weak on that back end. We still got Mikey. We got to see what 23 Lattimore is going to do.
Yeah,
but I love what they're doing on the back end. And, hey, listen, we coming to ball, man.
Come
Hail
on.
To the Commanders.
Let's do
Youngest
it.
In charge. Thank you for taking my call.
Appreciate
Hail
you,
to the Commanders, baby.
Let's take a quick timeout. When we come back, we'll take your calls on that if you got any. Who's going to be this year's Noah I? Alameda Zacchaeus talking about that bargain bin free agent that has a massive impact. Super Dave segued us perfectly. I want to take a look at some of the second-year Commanders on the other side of the break. Which second-year player do the Commanders need to make a jump the most? Give you a couple of guys that are on my mind next.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So, you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up in about 20 minutes or so, our pal Bijan Todd from the Monumental Sports Network going to join us as we talk a little bit about the Washington Wizards. I was wondering what the hell was blinking in the background, Metal Chris. Our studio's next to an apartment complex.
It's like a fire alarm, I think, went off.
Yeah, there's a fire alarm going on in Bilal Coulibaly's residence. he lives over there. Maybe Bilal's home. I doubt he's home.
Maybe I can run out and see if I'll do an interview real quick.
Yeah. He was obviously shut down for the remainder of the season due to a hamstring injury. Wizards on a West Coast road trip, so I don't know if he made the team, made the trip with the team, but there's something going on over there in that super overpriced luxury apartment. So best wishes to everyone. I hope everyone's safe over there, but it distracted me.
I don't see anyone evacuating. So
must be a drill. Must be a drill. Want to continue to talk all things Commanders before we shift gears to the Wizards here. We'll also get you a Nats update as well, as manager Davey Martinez gave a pretty significant update when it comes to opening day for the Curly W's. We'll get to that before we get out of here as well, but I want to take a look at right now. First of all, it's draft season, right? It's a mock draft Monday here on The Fan. We're eager to see who Washington actually selects. But before we get to this year's draft, real quick, I want to look at last year's draft for a second. Which second-year player do the Commanders need to make a jump the most? I know that's a loaded question. If you pick up what I'm putting down here, which second-year player do the Commanders need to make a jump the most? When you put it that way, right, I think it eliminates a couple of guys. I think it eliminates Ben Sinnott because you don't need him to take a jump because he's tight end number three right now. You got John Bates in the fold for three more seasons. Zach Ertz just re-upped on a new deal. And based on how spry he looked last year, wouldn't be shocked if this wasn't his final year here in D.C. So you don't need him to make an impact. Luke McCaffrey, the other sexy pick. He's like wide receiver five on your depth chart right now, behind Noah Brown, Deebo Samuel, Terry. And he does a kick returner too. But they don't need him to take a step forward. He could be nothing more than a kick returner next year, and they'll be fine. So I eliminate him. Now it's where it gets interesting. Obviously, Jaden Daniels, that could be an answer, because if he takes another step forward and we have the best quarterback in football, hell yeah, that helps your football team. So that's a way to look at it. Mikey Samer still, he needs to make a jump. He wasn't perfect last year, but I thought he played well, and he embodies what you want out of your cornerback position. So I don't think you need him to take a jump next year. Johnny Newton, another sexy pick. I don't think he needs to make a jump next year because guess what? He's still a part of your defensive line or your defensive tackle rotation. And the way it looks right now on March the 17th, and I know we're way too early for this, opening day in September, I think your first two defensive tackles that run out for the first 11 on defense is Javon Kinlaw and Deron Payne. So I don't think he needs to make a jump, but it would be helpful, right? Second round pick. You spent pretty premium capital on him. It would help the rest of your defense if he took a step forward. He was the guy that I was going to go with, but there are three guys here that I have listed in terms of which second-year player do the Commanders need to make a jump. The first one's Javonte Jean-Baptiste, their seventh-round defensive end from last year. They need him to make a jump because if he does, well, doesn't it alleviate all of the concern that we have about the defensive end spot? Here's the thing. I think he is going to make a jump. If he doesn't get hurt against Baltimore last year, he turned his ankle and it kept him out for a little while, about a month plus. If that doesn't happen to him, it's my prediction that he would have been the starting defensive end by season's end because of what he showed against the run. He was stout at the point of attack. I thought he did a good job setting the edge. And then he had just enough pass rush juice, in my opinion, to where you like to have him out there. So I like Javonte Jean-Baptiste. If he could take another jump forward, I think it changes the outlook of this football team. I really do. 100% feel that way. I think he's going to have a big year next year. I do. I think he's got great length for the position. I like his motor. I like his work ethic. The other guy that the Commanders need to make a jump, second-year linebacker Jordan McGee. Now, injuries took a major blow on, a major toll, rather, on his rookie campaign. The hamstring injury in camp sidelined him for a lot of the year. But once he got back healthy, you saw they began to use him. That Week 17 game against the Atlanta Falcons, they come out in their base 4-3 defense. Guess who the third linebacker is with Frankie and Bobby? It's Jordan McGee. Here's the reason why they need McGee to make a jump. It all goes back to that defensive end spot, right? If Jordan McGee can take a jump and be that second linebacker more often, right, next to Bobby Wagner, what does it do? It frees up Frankie Louvu to rush the passer more, and I'm all in favor of that. Frankie Louvu was like a bat out of hell last year, right? The bull in the china shop. He was a game wrecker at times when they were able to allow him to rush the passer as a blitzer in the A-gap or off the edge. You get someone else to emerge at linebacker that you're comfy playing, it just increases what you can do with Louvu. So I'm all for that. And I think Jordan McGee, the shorty can play, man. I think he's got traits from a physical standpoint. Like he can run. He did a really good job on special teams when he was active. I like him a lot. But if he takes a jump forward, imagine how much better or how much more of an impact, I guess, Frankie Louvu is able to have. So that's my other guy. My last guy's a little bit of a sleeper here in terms of who the Commanders need to make a jump. Could you imagine if Tyler Owens, the undrafted safety from last year, is able to make a jump? They like him a lot. Height, weight, speed, perfect for the position. He was excellent in training camp. Dog, last year in camp, it felt like it was every day I was tweeting out, Tyler Owens with the interception. Tyler Owens with a forced fumble. He just was around the football a lot. And at his size, let me go back to this depth chart to make sure I get it right. When it comes to Tyler Owens, he's a big cat who's got crazy athletic ability. 6'3", 213 pounds. If he could take a step forward next year, yeah. Makes you a lot better. In my opinion, sign me up for that. I want to see more of Tyler Owens. He was another guy that dealt with injuries this year. And if he didn't, I think he would have eventually become a part of their rotation. 1-800-636-1067 is the number. Which second-year player do the Commanders need to make a jump? We'll take your calls on that. Plus, the Wizards rebuild in excellent shape. More of that next on The Fan. 1-800-636-1067, the number. You can tweet at me as well. It's at NELL_BTP. Wow. Metal Grizz taking your calls and distracting me in the process. A lot more to get to. Bijan Todd going to join us momentarily. We'll be quick here in this segment. A couple of different things I want to get to before we get to Bijan. First, let's get you a Nationals update. Davey Martinez, the manager for the Washington Nationals, earlier today announced that it is going to be Mackenzie Gore getting the nod on the mound for opening day when the Nats take on the Philadelphia Phillies next Thursday. So excited for young Mackenzie Gore. Look, I think for Gore and the entire Washington Nationals bunch, this is a team that I think has a real opportunity. And I don't want to hyperbolize it, but I think they can make some noise this year, and here's why. Their major issue last year, first of all, they came out guns a-blazing, and it felt like during the early portion of the season, maybe they'd flirt with a wild card spot, but we know how that went. I look at what they were able to add, man. Bringing back Josh Bell, bringing some pop to your lineup. You get better in your infield defensively, and you add another bat with Nathaniel Lowe. And then, I don't know if y'all have watched how much of spring training y'all have caught, but I can't wait for the first full year of Dylan Cruz and James Wood in the majors. Can't wait for it. James Wood is crushing the ball this spring. Dylan Cruz has made some really good plays in the outfield defensively here in spring training. Love that. What I do worry about, though, is their lineup, right? We know Mackenzie Gore is going to get the nod on opening day. I would think that Jake Irvin is the next guy in the lineup, but, like, I don't know, maybe it's Michael Soroka. Maybe he is the guy that gets the nod. He's kind of struggled, if I'm being honest, in terms of how he's looked in the preseason. Should have expected it. Wasn't very good in Chicago, so we'll see when it comes to that. I know Trevor Williams expected to be one of the mainstays every fifth day, so we'll see how he's able to play. And then the other guy I'm looking at is young Mitchell Parker. Can young Mitchell Parker, who showed really tremendous flashes last year, can he be more consistent for you? That's the big thing that we're measuring here. I got Bijan Todd going to join us coming up here momentarily. I'll ask him about the young Wizards, but those young Wizards, all vibes. They won Saturday on a buzzer beater from Jordan Poole. Alex Saar registers his career high. And this team has turned a corner while also seeing the youngins take a massive step forward. They made history on Saturday for the season. Alex Saar, Bub Carrington, Keyshawn George on Saturday became the first trio of rookies in NBA history to knock down 80-plus threes each on the season. Massive feat, something you can't take for granted, and it's a big reason why I feel like this rebuild is in tremendous shape. We'll see how they finish up the season. They're in action tonight on the road against the Portland Trail Blazers. When we come back, we'll talk more things Washington Wizards, all things Washington Wizards, when our pal Bijan Todd joins the program. Welcome back. It's overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always live and free on the Odyssey app. You're tapped into the youngest of Charles and L. Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock. We'll continue our conversation surrounding the Washington Wizards. Right now, as we go out to the guest hotline, we're joined by our pal Bijan Todd, who covers the Wizards for the Monumental Sports Network. Bijan, what's going on, my man? How are you?
Doing well, Neil. How are you doing, man?
I'm good. Excited to watch good basketball here down the stretch with this group. They have been so much more competitive here post-All-Star break. I go back to February 1st is really like the turning point for this group, and I know they endured some losing streaks, you know, between now and then, but clearly they've turned some sort of a corner here. Big win over Denver on Saturday night. How would you describe the current state of this team?
I think you're right when you say they turned a corner. And what I like most about what this team has shown over the last 10-ish games, but also going back to February 1st, like you said, they look like a unit, right? They don't look like five individuals out there playing basketball. They look like their flow is a lot better. They look like they're communicating on the floor. And, you know, there was a play that happened in that win over Denver where I, in a room by myself, I said out loud, yes, finally, because Alex Sarr gave Jordan Poole a screen at the top of the key. Poole threw it back to him on the roll, and then Sarr found Keyshawn George cutting to the hoop, and George finished over Nikola Jokic. And that was a play, I think, that kind of encapsulated what this team is becoming. It's those middle ground guys like Poole and Kispert and them kind of guiding the young guys, the rookies, to learning about the NBA, figuring out what it means to be a team. And that was why they won that game, I think, because they barely pulled it out, but it was plays like that that made the difference.
Yeah, for sure. And I think I'm glad you continue to bring up Jordan Poole. It feels like he gets lost when the rookies are playing so well. But I think he has been the steadying force for this group all year long, being consistent night in, night out. And I think he's been a huge part of what's happened here. We talk about this. We've had this conversation before, Bijan. How do you view Jordan in terms of this team long term? Because I continue to feel like, man, first and foremost, they may be better quicker than we anticipate because of guys like Jordan. But when you do get to that point where you're ready to compete and flirt with a play-in spot or a playoff spot, I think Jordan's young enough still to where he could be a part of that. What say you?
Absolutely, man. He's still only 25, and I think it's an underrated thing in the NBA to have guys who are not really vets in the sense that, you know, they're seasoned veterans, because Jordan Poole's only been in the league a handful of years, but it's an underrated thing to have guys that are still young who have not yet entered their prime, bringing guys like Bilal Coulibaly and Alex Sarr and Keyshawn George and Bob Carrington into the NBA and helping them assimilate into the game, right? He's constantly pulling guys aside. He's talking to guys after practice, before practice. He brought the entire team down to Miami, I believe, this past summer to work out with them. And that's something that you can't really tell a guy to do, right? That's something that needs to come naturally. And again, Jordan Poole is still just 25. He probably has another 2 years to go before he hits his prime. And that timeline that we're talking about right now, I think you're right that we could be better than people expect in the shorter term. And if that's the case, then prime Jordan Poole and then guys like Bilal and Coulibaly and Alex Sarr and them just starting to enter that phase where they're going to be volume scorers, I think is a dangerous thing. So again, the same thing I said last time we had this conversation, I think he it would make sense for the team to want to keep him around long-term, but you know, it'll depend on a lot of factors. It'll depend on how Will Dawkins and Michael Winger see the timeline going, how they think about Jordan Poole's efficiency, because he's been more efficient recently than he has in the past, but you know, that could be a fleeting thing, but those are all questions they need to answer. But I still like him, same as you, man.
For sure. I think he could play. I'm glad that, you know, it feels like his reputation is starting to get rehabbed a little bit nationally. He was a punching bag for, it felt like, last year, and the center of every joke. And you
not
know,
literally. Not literally.
Yeah, well, not
bag.
Literally. Wow. Cannot even believe that that's how we segue. We'll go from that to this. I want to ask you about Alex Sarr in particular here, man. And it just, what do you think about him mentally, man? I look at him as a guy, obviously he could play, he's gonna impact shots on the defensive end, we've seen him add the three-point ball to his arsenal, but I go back to summer league, he looks night and day difference from a confidence standpoint, from a shot selection standpoint, and then I even think, you know, the effort on the boards has been even better. How much credit does he deserve for staying the course throughout this entire thing, man? After there were moments during the regular season where he struggled as well, but obviously Saturday night, 34 points, a career high, really feels like he's entering that next step of his rookie season as well.
Absolutely. He deserves a lot of credit because players hear this stuff, right? They hear the naysayers and they hear the guys calling him a bust after three summer league games. They hear all this stuff. And I think it's a credit to a guy who's still 19 years old to be able to step into a role where he feels confident with the ball in his hands and guarding the opposing team's best player. Like, there was a moment in that game 2 games ago against Detroit when they beat Detroit where Cade Cunningham drove on him and he swatted Cade Cunningham at the rim and he flexed on him and he was like more excited than I've ever seen Alex Sarr be on an NBA floor. And that was a huge play that ended up leading to the 4-point win. And so when you have a player like Alex Sarr who there were questions about his dog mentality leading into the draft. Like, does he have a motor behind him? Does he have a good work ethic? All this stuff. I think over the course of the season, he's proving that he does have that. And just because he's not the loudest guy on the floor doesn't mean he doesn't bring it, right? Right. And to your point, he is showing his rebounding. He's been more efficient from deep. He shot over 50% from three the past two games, and they were both wins. And, you know, on the court, the thing that I like most about him is finally starting to play like a seven-footer, right? He's not just drifting along the wings like he's 6'5". There was a lot of plays in that Denver game where he was drifting into the lane and he was bodying his way up against Jokic and trying to shoot within 5 feet. So I think it's all very good development from that kid.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think his mentality is a big part of this thing as well. He's got all the talent in the world. Just seeing the shift in mentality has been, you know, what's been most enticing to me. We mentioned February 1st as kind of that turning point for this group. Some fans would also point to post-All-Star break and the addition of Marcus Smart and Chris Middleton. Just what have you seen from those guys? And then for both of them, do you expect them here next year?
It's a good question. You know, Chris Middleton has that player option leading into next year, which I think is worth $34 million. I cannot see him turning that down. It's hard to imagine the market would be super robust for a guy, just not because of anything else other than his age, you know, at 33. But I think he will be around next year. Marcus Smart is also under contract for next year, and I expect him to be around as well. And, you know, one thing that's been the case since they got here is that everybody eats, right? And there's been a thing. I asked Brian Keefe about this after that game. I think it was against Toronto earlier in the month. It was against Utah earlier in the month when they took down Utah by three. In that game, I remember every single player, with the exception of like two guys, had at least 9 field goal attempts. Mm-hmm. And I asked Brian Keefe, hey, how much do Chris and Marcus lend themselves to everybody eats? Like, how well does the ball move when they're on the floor? And he's like, there's a direct correlation there because those are guys who opposing defenses need to focus on, but they're also not selfish, right? They're going to let other guys eat if it makes sense in that play, in that moment. So I think having those veterans around who are older than guys like Jordan Poole, who have been to the finals, Chris Middleton has won a championship, obviously, you know, it's leading to what I can see being a very balanced Wizards roster where you got a couple guys who are over 30 kind of, you know, manning the ship. Then you got the middle-aged guys like Poole and Kispert and Justin Champagne who are there to help the younger guys. And Chris and Marcus, I think, were great pickups. I can see them being around next year. I think durability could be a question with them, but they've shown that since they've been here, they're very effective on the floor.
One point, Bijan, that has been made a lot on social media, and I know it's not smart, especially with Wizards Twitter, it's not smart to read tweets and then think that they're accurate. From the fans, that is. A lot's been made about Bilal Coulibaly being shut down for what seems like the rest of the season. Will Dawkins and company calling it 4 to 6 weeks. He may return for the final couple of games. But if he doesn't, how would you describe his sophomore season and how much meat do you think is left on the bone for him in terms of developing and getting better?
I think there's a lot of room for him to get better. You know, I looked at his numbers just the other day, and pretty much across the board, everything went up except for percentages, right? He's averaging over 12 points a game. That's up. He's averaging, you know, more steals, more rebounds, more assists than last year. The only thing is his efficiency went down, right? He shot just 42% from the field this year and 28% from deep, and that's not what you want to see in a second-year player. But again, you know, it's a lot of different factors. And to your first point, I would assume he's not going to suit up again this year. I think if the timeline holds accurately, he would be able to return to activities with maybe 2 or 3 games left, and I can't imagine that the Brian Keefe in the front office would want to risk him. But I think if he was given a larger piece of the pie this year in terms of ball handling, in terms of being a go-to scorer, and he did. I think he did well in that role, and I think he continued to guard the best player on the opposing team. You want to see him find a shot a little bit more. I think it's tough for a guy who's 20 years old to be able to maintain efficiency from downtown, and you know that 6% dip from three was not a good development, I think. But again, you know, this will happen to young players. Like Alex Saar had that 1 month this year where he shot like 48% from three, and it was just insane. And I think Bilal Coulibaly still has that in him. He's going to continue to grow, I think. I think he still has, you know, room to get his weight up. I think he could end up being something like 6'8" by the time next year rolls around. So there's room for him to develop there, and I think he will. And I think with guys that can take sort of the brunt of the scoring off of him, like Poole, like Kispert, like Saar, I think it'll lead itself to being a little bit more comfortable for him going forward if he stays healthy, which I think he can.
I think he can as well. Joined right now by Bijan Todd, who covers the Wizards for the Monumental Sports Network. Bijan, the Bilal thing is interesting to me when it comes to like how fans view it. I think, and correct me if I'm wrong here, because he was the first draft pick of this rebuild, I think there are just sky-high expectations for what he's supposed to develop into. I look at him as a guy like his ceiling is maybe he, to me at least, his ceiling is best case scenario, he develops into a all-NBA level defender. And then from an offensive standpoint, somebody that can give you 15, 16 points any given night and then improve that three-point shot. Am I selling him short? Or do you think that's just realistic from what you've seen in the first 2 years?
I think it's realistic, and I think that one thing that I keep pointing to, and I don't want anybody to say this is my player comparison for Bilal, but people need to remember that Kawhi Leonard came into the league without a jump shot, right? He did not know how to shoot when he came out of San Diego State. Lo and behold, he finds his shot over the course of his first few years and then becomes that all-NBA level defender that we all know now. I can see Bilal having a similar career arc. I think he had a down year shooting this year, but he scored more points. He had a lot more explosive plays. I think he was a lot more aggressive getting to the hoop. And, you know, I think because of the fact that opposing defenders wanted to close him out on the three-point line, it gave him the opportunity to attack closeouts more and penetrate the lane, and he did that. But I think his career could be similar to what you're predicting here, Linnell. I think, you know, if he's able to find his shot, maintain some consistency with it, defense I think is always going to be his calling card, and I think that's a good thing for a player with his length. But if he can be, you know, a plus defender and a guy who teams have to respect from deep, like Paul George, for example, mm-hmm. I think that can be a realistic expectation for him. And his athleticism by itself means that he's going to have a high floor, right?
Exactly.
He's going to have a high floor regardless just because of how athletic he is. And then if you tack on another athletic player in this upcoming draft, you're going to have a very versatile Wizards lineup, I think, with multiple guys who can defend at a high level and put the ball in the hoop.
Running out of time here with you, Bijan, so I have to be quick on these last two. Keyshawn George, dude, holy cow. Right now, I think it's, what, 5 games away? If he's able to knock down a 3 in his next 5, he will have the rookie record for most consecutive games with a 3-point field goal made. Love that about him, but he's, to me, of all the first-round rookies for the Wizards, all 3 of these guys, I think his development has been the most notable in terms of in-season strides that he's made. What do you think the ceiling is for a guy like him, man? Because all of a sudden with Sar, Bub, Bilal, I mean, he looks like, to me, like he has the potential right now to be maybe the second best guy of this rebuild.
I agree. I was just talking to some of my colleagues this week about him, and I think that in terms of where he was in game one and where he is now at game 66, it is night and day, kind of like what you said with Sar from the summer league to now. You know, he's putting the ball in the hoop. He's getting a lot more comfortable shooting the three. He shot, you know, 50%, 50%, 40%, 60% from three in his last 4 games, and he's scoring double digits. You know, he's averaging over 12 points a game in the month of March. And I think, you know, he's defending at a high level. He's a connector. I think that's the word that Brian Keefe and Will Dawkins like to use. Like, I think the team's plus minus is the highest when Keyshawn George is on the floor. And he's versatile, you know. And I think going forward for him, he'll be kind of in that same boat as Bilal Coulibaly, where all we need to see is that consistency shooting the ball, and he'll be in a very good spot. And, you know, I think he's shown that this year, and he's had fluctuating minutes, but I think he's stayed the course. And the more he starts, I think the more he's going to improve.
I'll be real here. A little bit of a bias, obviously, I guess, because he's homegrown guy. My favorite Wizard throughout the entire season has been Bub Carrington. There is a level
Baltimore
of tough.
Kid.
Yes, sir. Come on, man. Baltimore Bub is what we're going to start calling him. There's a level of competitive energy that he brings to the floor each and every night. He could be this team's Marcus Smart down the line when they're ready to compete and win because he's got that type of mentality. But I also think his efficiency in the mid-range and what he has shown already offensively, man, the sky is the limit for this kid. How impressed have you been with him? It's hard to find an actual question without just praising the dude, B-John, but like, how have you seen him develop throughout the year? And then in terms of like ceiling, I know it's only his rookie season, B-John, so we're playing hypothetical Harry here, but like, Do you see him potentially being the quote-unquote point guard of the future for this group?
I can see it, man. I think the thing that's most impressive to me about Bub is that he's probably had the biggest fluctuation in his role mm-hmm. of any of the three rookies. He's, you know, started consistently at the beginning of the year, around the trade deadline and after the trade deadline. He was coming off the bench a lot, but he has maintained, I think, a level of professionalism and a level of efficiency that has been hard for some of the other players on the team to find. And I knew that before the draft happened, I was watching a lot of tape on him, and I said, this kid's mid-range game is like Sean Livingston-esque, right? It was the number one thing on his scouting report that popped off the page. I was like, if this guy can attack closeouts and score in the mid-range, it's a lost art in the NBA, but it's very valuable. Like analytics people think that the mid-range is lost, but this kid can make a living in the NBA off of his mid-range game. The only thing that you want to see more from him is more vertical attack, like at the rim. Mm-hmm. I would like to see him penetrate the lane a little bit more, but that'll come in time. And I can see him being the point guard of the future on this team. And if not that, Linnell, I can see him being a really, really good, I don't want to call him a sidekick to Jordan Poole, mm-hmm. but I can see him being a really, really good backcourt partner where Jordan Poole can be the high-volume scorer. Bub Carrington can kind of be that player who could be a pass-first guy and can get you a bucket from the mid-range when needed. Just wait for him to pop off, and you know he'll use that 6'7 wingspan of his to continue to defend well. I can see him being a key member of this team scoring-wise for many years to come for sure.
I totally agree, man. Me, remember, you heard it here first, listeners. Me and Bijan think that Bub and JP could be the backcourt of the future for this group.
Same wavelength, man. Me and Linnell, as
for
always.
For sure, man. I appreciate you giving us some time, as always, my man. We'll do it again soon.
Thank you, Linnell. Talk to you soon, man.
For sure. That is Bijan Todd, one of the absolute best. Talking all things Washington Wizards. You can read his work online at monumentalsports.com. Does feature stories for the website. One of the absolute best talking all things DC family. We'll take a quick timeout when we come back. More overtime here on The Fan.